Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everyone. I hope everybody enjoyed Memorial Day week, who is celebrating out here in the United States last week. And a special thank you to our sponsors today who make today's show possible, Markham Search. Markham Search LLC offers premier professional recruiting services, and Markham says that their professional recruiters recognize the importance of working closely with the job seekers as well as the clients they represent to make that perfect match happen. So thank you to our sponsors at Markham Search. And thank you so much to our guest today, Mark Perna. So Mark C. Perna is the founder and CEO of TFS, a full-service strategic communications and consulting firm whose mission is to share and support every client's passion for making a difference. Mark, a graduate of John Carroll University, has many years of experience addressing industry leaders on the topic of expanding their reach in an increasingly global marketplace. As an international expert on generations Y and Z, Mark has devoted his career to empowering educators and employers to unleash the tremendous potential of today's young people. After successfully parenting two millennials as a single father, Mark has become a passionate advocate for bridging the generational divides that are contributing to America's profound skills gap. Parents, schools, districts, businesses, and state organizations across North America have successfully used Mark's best practices, including the TFS Education with Purpose philosophy and Career Tree strategy, to connect more effectively with the younger generation. A dynamic and motivational public speaker, Mark frequently delivers keynote speeches at national and statewide events and spoke at Harvard University by special invitation. At TFS, Mark heads an energetic team of talented professionals who share his vision of making a bigger difference in education and workforce development. TFS partners with schools, districts, businesses, and state organizations of all sizes nationwide to help them experience significant gains in enrollment, engagement, retention, and performance rates. Mark has published numerous articles in national publications and interviews frequently on radio shows, television, and podcasts. His award-winning bestseller, Answering Why, Unleashing Passion, Purpose, and Performance in Younger Generations, was written to help educators, employers, and parents understand generations Y and Z and to inspire them to greater performance in all areas of life. Thanks so much for joining us today, Mark.
Jennifer, it's an honor to be with you.
And I made it through your bio.
that's well done.
Impressive accolades.
Well, thank you. It's been a long road to get to this point. And I like to joke with people, it's taken me 23 years to become an overnight success. So that's sometimes it just takes that little extra effort, you know?
Yeah, I love that meme that goes around that says success, and then it says what goes into it. And at the top, you see kind of an iceberg, and all you see is this little tip kind of poking out of the surface. That's all we see. And then what actually goes into someone's success is all the stuff that lays below the surface that we may never even know about.
I know I've seen that poster many times, and it's so true. You know, I mean, it takes a lot of effort. It takes, and you know what, it even takes a lot of failure along the way. You know, I am more defined by how I have corrected failure in my life than I am in the success that I have in my life, because, you know, it wasn't always an easy road for me. It was very difficult back in the mid 90s. And, you know, I went through some pretty tough stuff. And, you know, I went through through a divorce, a bankruptcy. I weighed over 400 pounds. I became a full-time single dad of a 9 and 7 year old. I mean, all of this happened in 1996. And I was in the midst of some pretty tough stuff in my life. And what happened is I use this metaphor all the time. I heard the branch creak in my life, and I write about this and I speak about this a lot, is that, you know, if you've ever climbed a tree, you know, and you go high up into the tree, you go on a really firm limb, and all of a sudden the limb underneath you cracks, you know, if you can imagine that feeling, right? You're 30 feet up, and the thing that's holding you up literally, you know, is now a danger of sending you plummeting to the ground. And it's at that moment that, that you really, if you think about what happens, is you, there are three things that happen. Number one, you become singularly focused, right? It doesn't matter what stresses and challenges you have in your life. You're now focused on the task at hand. The second thing that happens is you strategically plan, right? How am I going to get out of this? Well, you know, I got to get back to the safety of the trunk. I'm going to grab something. Where am I going to fall? You know, all those things go through your mind. And then the third thing is you take action. And so all those things happen really in the blink of an eye. And so back in 1996, you know, when I had all of these horrible, you know, challenges and potential failures, you know, looking me in the face, I needed to focus, plan, and take action. And I did. And I lost 175 pounds in 13 months and have kept it off.
Wow.
I started this company, and in 23 years, I've become an international thought leader and best-selling, award-winning author, and you know all these amazing things. I mean, now I'll do close to 70 keynote speeches this year alone, and all of this was, you know, at a, you know, since this time that, you know, I had failed at a marriage, I'd failed in a business. You know, fortunately, I was a pretty decent father. And so all of these things really contributed to me being who I am today, and it's made me more grateful for being where I am. So yeah, so I mean, yeah, the tip of the iceberg. You don't see all the my iceberg under the surface was pretty elaborate. Pretty elaborate under the surface iceberg.
Well, tell me. So that this is a great thing to kind of delve into before we kind of jump into your book a little bit here and all the amazing work that you're doing with Generations Y and Z. I would love to know, how did you get through when that branch, when you hear that branch crack and you literally feel like the sky is falling or that you're physically falling and unable to catch yourself? How did you move through that to get to where you are today?
Well, I mean, it was difficult. It's challenging. You know, I never want to belittle, you know, when I think back to 1996, which is when, you know, a large part of this was happening in my life. I mean, it was a very challenging time to have all of those things kind of going wrong at the same time, because I filed bankruptcy, and that was due to a failed business venture on my part. I own it. I made bad decisions. I went the wrong direction. I invested money poorly, and when I left that, and then started a job where I wasn't making enough money each month. And you know, I don't know if you've ever had too much month at the end of the money, but I certainly did. you know that the. You know, the 22nd, 23rd of the month rolls around and you're like, oh, money's gone. You know, we got to make it to the end. And you're thankful when February rolls around because obviously less days in the month. And so you, you know, you're like, oh, thank God it's February. And so when all of these things are going on and going wrong, you know, it's so easy to become so turned in on yourself and feel like a failure. And I guess, one of the things that really came into my mind and really became something I focused on was, you know, the branch creaks in our lives many times. Anytime there's a fear of loss or a sense of urgency, the branch creaks. And that's kind of been the metaphor that I've been using because of the experiences I had back in the mid-90s. And so I've always known that growth in our lives, any of our lives, happen when in fact we step outside our comfort zone, almost never when we are inside our comfort zone. So that literally when the branch creaks and those are tough moments in our lives, that's when we're uncomfortable. To me, I think those are the moments that make all the difference, because it's really at those times that we focus, we plan, and we take action. That doesn't always happen proactively when things are going the right way. And so it's because of that that I've actually gotten to the point where I am now in my career. And so as I look back at the 90s, I'm thankful for the 90s. I'm thankful for everything I went through. But it has changed the way, Jennifer, now that I look at issues and challenges that come before me now. When things come before me now, I am always thinking to myself, man, there's a positive about this. I may not know what it is today, but if I focus, plan, and take action, something positive will come out of this. And it almost always does. And it's just by changing the perspective, looking through the looking glass in a different direction. So it's made all the difference for me.
Yeah, I love that. One of my mentors last week was teaching a class, and he literally asked somebody in the audience of, say, a room full of 60 or 100 people for a pair of their prescription glasses. And he put on the prescription glasses and he said, now I want you to imagine these glasses are purple. And now all of you are blurry, all of you look fat, and you all look purple. So in my life, I could go around saying that everybody looks purple and fat, when in reality, it's just the lens that I'm filtering the world through. And I've always resonated with that, because I think it's so true, is that if you can actually see the lens that you're viewing the world through, if you can acknowledge that you have people are fat and purple glasses on, then you have an opportunity to choose to take that lens off and to replace it with a different lens. And to your point, gratitude is a wonderful lens that scientific studies have shown actually rewire your brain to perceive things differently.
And the more you do it, the more, you know, positive action you can take in your life, and the better you're prepared to make the plans necessary in order to create a competitive advantage. Because that's what you need in today's world. I mean, you need to create some kind of an advantage that allows you to stand out amongst the crowd, because there's a tremendous number of people out there and noise out there. And for you to rise above that, you have to, in today's changing economy, become extraordinary. And to become extraordinary doesn't mean that you have to have talents that are extraordinary. It means that you simply have to understand that the steps that you take in the direction of your desires will allow you to stand out in those if you have the plan built to put the things together necessary to accomplish whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish. You know, I call it the light at the end of the tunnel. I had a very clear light at the end of the tunnel. You know, the light at the end of the tunnel can be anything, what you want your lifestyle to be, what you want your career to be, whatever it is. But in order for you to walk down the tunnel, you have to have a very clear vision of what the light is at the end, so that you're walking effectively, you know, down to whatever it is that's drawing you, you know, based on your own unique interests, talents, and abilities. So it's an important piece of all of it.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing to think about, whether it's personally or professionally. If you look at somebody who kind of lands that dream job, or maybe they get the house they always wanted or the spouse they always dreamed of, and they get married, and then they say that's why a lot of things fall apart. Because when you actually get what you want, if you don't have that driving force, something at the end of the tunnel that's going to drive you either through the tough times or to motivate you towards that next level, then you just kind of give up, or you become comfortable, and then you wind up suffering and being miserable in life and wondering why you got what you wanted and you're still unhappy.
Well, it is so much truth in that, Jennifer. And so this back in the 60s, during the space race, you know, a lot of the people who landed on the moon and walked the moon, their goal was to get to the moon. Their goal in life was to achieve what 18 people, I don't know the exact number, but roughly 18 to 20 people accomplished walking on the moon. But most of them later on went through divorces, they went through depression, they went through all kinds of stuff, because they made that one goal the goal of their life. And when it was accomplished, they didn't know what to do. They didn't know what the second act was, not to mention the third act. So they didn't know what to do, and they didn't know how to deal with that. So it's important to know that, you know, the goal of what we do, the gold of what we do, is in the journey and less so the destination. It's important to have a destination, but you need to enjoy the journey and be grateful for the journey in order to, you know, accomplish the goal. And then you're so correct. You have to look towards the next goal and the next goal. And you constantly and you can adjust it. You can go left, you can go right, you can go straight, you know, you can go backwards, you can go any direction you want. But choosing how you want to live, what you're looking for, and then even in the career and lifestyle of the light at the end of the tunnel, and I tell audiences this all the time, is, you know, young people today, or certainly, you know, Generation Y, Millennials, and Generation Z, finding the perfect intersection between lifestyle and career is a critical intersection to find. There are lots of people who take careers because they think they'll make more money, but they don't enjoy the lifestyle that they have because they're not happy at work, which is, we spend a tremendous amount of time there. So finding kind of that intersection between career and lifestyle, and it's important to note that young people today, and when I say young people, I mean 39 and younger, you know, lifestyle is such an important part of their life, especially in Generation Z now coming up right behind Generation Y Millennials, is that, you know, more than half of every decision they make is based on how it affects their lifestyle. Career has actually now become a lifestyle decision. So if they can find the perfect intersection of that, they'll be very happy, and they'll be able to move forward very effectively to create the lifestyle that they want. So all of this kind of plays together, and all of this, you know, through my years of experience and failures and then successes, has been an extraordinary journey that I love to share with anyone interested in kind of taking wherever they are now to the next step and how to perform at that level.
Yeah. So tell me, I mean, I think it's obviously applicable, I think, to a lot of people, but to your point, this is much more. I'm 38. So I resonate with this ever since I was very young. You know, I've always told people it's so important to have that balance between work and life, and that money isn't everything. I talk people out of jobs every single year in recruiting because people say, oh, this job is going to offer me $10, $20, $30, $100,000 more than I've made before. And the caveat I give them is yes, but at what cost? You know, are you going to give up your happiness or you love your boss and you love everything else? So tell me, how did millennials and, you know, Gen Z become so important to you? Was it your sons or was it something else that kind of inspired you to go down this path?
Yeah, you know, but both things. I spend a lot of time in the educational and the workforce development space as a profession, and that certainly, you know, turns me on to younger generations and to understanding them and what makes them tick and how they're thinking and how we can best unleash their performance. But also being a single dad of two millennials who today are 32 and 30, and they're both, you know, very successful. They make great money. They're independent. They're self-reliant. They live near me. We have a beautiful relationship. And I haven't written a check to either one of them in the past 10 years. So that's a beautiful thing that, you know, that is great if you can accomplish that. But see, here's how I look at the younger generations. And this is what's different than most things that are out there. Most people who write about younger generations and who speak about younger generations, it's largely negatively slanted. You know, they're lazy, they're entitled, they're this, they're that. And I don't go for any of that. I think young people today, 39 and younger, are the most incredible generations to come down the pike. I think they're the most intelligent, resourceful, and pit bull-like generations that we've ever seen in this country. When they see a want to in their life, that's something they truly want, they will move heaven and earth to get there. Our challenge as parents, educators, and employers, it's getting them to want something. And so that's where the light at the end of the tunnel strategy comes in, is this: the more they can connect their lifestyle and career towards what they want, the further they will get. I'll give you a great example of my son, Nick, which is part of what I wrote in my book. So my son, Nick, his sophomore year of high school, Jennifer, he hated going to school. He hated every piece of it. He missed the maximum number of days his freshman year, maximum number of days his sophomore year. And he would wake up every day with a different ailment to avoid going to school. Like, Dad, my neck hurts and my back hurts and my head hurts and his stomach hurts. He could throw up on cue, though, which was impressive. And halfway through his sophomore year, he was sporting a rather unimpressive 1.5 cumulative grade point average. Ooh. And he hated it. And it was an argument every day. And all of this was the way his career went in high school until the day he walked in and spent 30 minutes in a computer programming class. He literally came home that night and we had the following conversation. I looked across the kitchen island. We were standing in our kitchen, and like many days, I asked this question. I said, so how did it go today? And he said, Dad, I know what I want to do with the rest of my life. And I thought to myself, dear God.
Wow. what's up?
I was like, wow. Because for anyone who's a parent and you've had a kid, there's no scarier phrase you can hear from your son or daughter than I know what I want to do with the rest of my life. Because, you know, whatever comes out of their mouth next is either something to applaud or something to start talking them out of. And so I looked at him and I said, all right, I'll bite. What? He goes, I want to be a software engineer. I want to punctuate. He didn't say, I want to be a programmer. He went to a class on programming and said, I want to be a software engineer. And so I looked across him and I started asking him some questions. I said, well, first off, what's a software engineer? He knew and he explained it to me. Second question I asked was, well, how much money can you make doing that? And he said, somewhere between $120,000 to $200,000 a year. No joke, Jennifer. I checked that box off in my head and said, sounds like a living wage to me. I asked the third question. I said, well, how do you get to be a software engineer? What's the pathway for that? And he looks at me and he goes, well, he says, first off, I'm going to have to graduate high school. Thank you, God. The words graduate high school. Right. Exactly. Right. The words graduate high school had never come out of his mouth before. And he says, I'm going to have to graduate high school, and then I'm going to have to get a 4-year degree in computer science, and then I have to get some work experience, and then go back and get a master's degree. Seriously, 12 hours earlier, he was throwing up to avoid going to school. Tonight, he needs a master's degree. And so I said, you're prepared to, you're going to do this? I mean, you're prepared to put in the effort and the work to do this. A typical dad thing to say, right? He looks at me and he goes, I'm going to do this. My son graduated from high school with a 2.5 cumulative grade point average, went to take the ACT, scored a 32, got a small scholarship to Akron University, where he completed a four-year degree in computer science. A month before he graduated, he had two job offers from two international software firms, both at $50,000 apiece. He took one. Today, he's changed jobs several times. He's had several promotions along the way, but he's 30 years old. He makes $85,000 a year. He's self-reliant, independent, and he lives the lifestyle that he's always wanted to live. That's why I'm passionate about young people. That's why I'm passionate about finding ways for millions of other young people to have that same experience. So the strategies and the things that I write about in Answering Why, and the things that I speak about when I'm you know, out across North America, is so that I can help parents, educators, and employers truly understand the power of unleashing passion, purpose, and performance in younger generations. Because once it's ignited, it's extraordinary. They are extraordinary.
So I believe you, Mark, because I totally resonate with this, and I agree, and I've heard both sides of the coin. You know, I work with a lot of law firms and corporations, and you get people where on the one side, you know, they might be very motivated and, you know, very driven towards something. And on the other side, you might get people who some people might consider fickle. So the question I think that a lot of our listeners might be thinking, who might be parents out there or be employers, is what is that spark and how do you capture it that helps to motivate that generation, you know, Y or Z generation?
I tell parents all the time that they need to start with a different question. A lot of educators, parents start with questions when they're talking, and this could be someone in their 20s, teens, or even 8 or 9, is they start with the question of, well, you know, what do you want to do when you grow up? Or what do you want to do, you know, in your career? And to a lot of people, that's a daunting question to answer. They don't know. They have no idea what options are available. They have no idea what's truly out there. There are extraordinary careers across America that are possible. I mean, there are 6.7 million open jobs right now in America that can't be filled because the people don't have the skills, the technology, or the academic knowledge in order to be able to do them. It's created an incredible gap that's grown 19 straight years in a row. But 6.7 million jobs, and employers are, and these are in high demand, high wage industries like aerospace and aviation and healthcare and transportation and manufacturing and construction and many others. And so what I tell people is you need to start with the lifestyle discussion with someone. So parents need to become adept at having this lifestyle conversation with kids. What are they looking for? What kind of a life would they like to live? You know, do they want to live by the ocean? Do they want to live in the mountains? Do they want to live urban, suburban, rural? What kinds of things do they see themselves doing in their life? The more you can connect them to a lifestyle conversation, career becomes something that allows them to achieve whatever lifestyle it is. And lifestyles, depending on where you are in this country, what your background is, your culture, and everything else, I mean, there's a huge pendulum of the answers you'll get from young people on lifestyle. You know, on one end of the spectrum, you're going to get people who answer, you know, I want to live in a mansion and I want a car and a boat and all these beautiful things. On the other end of the spectrum of the pendulum might be that I want two hot meals a day. I just want to make sure that, you know, I can live, you know, modestly in my life. And then, of course, there's everything in between. But starting with that conversation is a powerful way to have that to get young people speaking about where they want to go. And if they don't want to go anywhere, then A, they're either not being honest or they're still perplexed by what's possible in life and they don't think it's possible. And then you have to work through that as well, because, you know, everyone should be able to put their finger on, well, what would you like? I mean, even if your lifestyle is, I want to sit around and play video games all day. I had a young person say that to me once. I want to sit around and play video games. I was actually in a school, I was in a school 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. And I'm walking around the school and I walked into a classroom and the teacher nicely invited me in. It was a career and technical education school. And I was talking with one of the students from upstate New York, and I was going around the room. I said, please tell me how you're going to use this. Kind of like, what's the next step? Are you going to go to a 4-year university, 2-year community college? Like, what's the next step for you? And I got around to this one young man, and this young man looks at me and he says, I have no goal. I said, you have no goal at all. I says, none. He says, I have no goal. I said, so your goal is to then have no goal. Is that the goal? And he looks at me and he was like perplexed. And he goes, yeah, I guess it. I said, so then you have a goal. I said, your goal is to have no goal. And he kind of understood where I was going with that. I was like, because he's made it like a badge of honor that he doesn't know where he wants to go. I said, but that's your goal. You're choosing to not have a goal. You know, it's okay that you don't have one. I'm just saying, but you're choosing to not have one. And he kind of understood later where I was going with that. And he came up to me like 2 hours later. I was still in the building. He walked around. He goes, I thought a lot about what you said to me. He goes, I never really looked at it that way. And I go, one day you will figure it out. But he needs to understand what's possible in his life. He needs to understand that he can achieve. And I find that many times young people today are too comfortable. They may be too comfortable. My son Nick was way too comfortable. We lived in a nice home. He had a nice upbringing. He didn't really have to kick in until there was something that he wanted. Once there was something he wanted, then he ignited. And young people just need to figure out what that thing is.
So for any of our listeners out there who maybe they're employers or managers and they have people who might be Generation Y or Z working with them in the company and they feel like their employees just aren't motivated, would you have a similar conversation with somebody who's an employee as opposed to a parent-child relationship, or would that conversation look different? And if so, what would it look like?
Well, I would start, it's a great question, Jennifer. What I would start with in most organizations is understanding the power of the younger generations first and foremost, to understand what they think and how they, and what makes them tick is an important piece prior to having that conversation. A lot of, you know, certainly older employers, there's a generational rift where, you know, older folks seem to think that the younger people have missed the boat, but younger people look at older people and say they've missed the boat. And it's just different perspectives, going back to your lenses, right? So it's just different perspectives. And so what I tell a lot of business owners today in my speeches and then afterwards when I consult is that young people today have to see vision. So I'll give you a great example. I call the younger generations the Y generation, W-H-Y generations, because they need an answer to that question for everything they do. And this may be an aha moment. It is when I travel around the country. If you ask a young person, 39 or younger, to do something and they look back at you and they say, well, why should I do it that way? This happens in businesses all day long. This happens in educational organizations. It's like, here's what I want you to do. Well, why should I do it that way? Most of us take that as a smart aleck response, and we give the all-American response back, which of course is because I said so. The aha moment, Jennifer, comes this way. Most young people don't mean it as a smart aleck response. What most young people are saying when they say, why should I do it this way, is they're saying, look, why do we do it this way? Because there has to be a better way to do this. There has to be a way to use Google something. There must be a way to put this in the cloud. There must be a way to get a bigger impact from this. And what we do is we cut their knees out from underneath them and we don't give them an opportunity to try. And that is soul crushing to young people today. So the people who work for me, I have 24 people that work for me and support my efforts all across North America. More than half of them are in the age group we're talking about. They're in their 20s and 30s. And they're the best employees I have by far. They're the hardest working, greatest focused. They work nights, weekends, holidays, vacations. I can't get them to shut it off. They actually push me further and faster to accomplish because they buy into the vision of where we're going. And that's what's critical for business and industry today is you must create a vision and purpose that far exceeds making money and shareholder value. Because that's what Deloitte found, you know, the global accounting and consulting firm, is they found in doing a survey that they released about 18 months ago or so at this point. And what it said was that 68% of female millennials and 64% of male millennials, which is 2/3 of the largest working generation in this country right now, plans to leave their current job within the next 3 years. The number one reason given was the number one reason by far, and it was that they no longer want to work in an organization where pursuit of the almighty dollar is the only outcome. They want to work in an organization that gives back. They want to work in an organization that has purpose. They want to work in an organization where the pride of their contribution will actually add to the greater good. This is a cataclysmic shift in workforce development because employers now need to connect beyond creating this wonderful environment for employees, but they now must connect their vision, their culture, and their opportunities to their workforce that allows them to bring their pride along with the mission of the company. And the companies that do that will end up attracting and retaining more employees. The ones that don't will have a tough time with a revolving door in and out.
Yeah, it's so true. And I've noticed that both in recruiting team members for my own team and in recruiting team members for a lot of offices. And we were just talking today about an upcoming lunch and learn that we're going to do with a bunch of human resources professionals in Orange County. And one of the topics was, how do you obtain talent in this market? And what is it that matters? What matters to people in today's job market? And I think that people are still thinking that it was what mattered to baby boomers or what mattered 10 or 20 years ago, which was stability, longevity, you know, perhaps, you know, having an organization that, you know, that you can go to work every day and know the same people. And I think the generations, at least that I'm seeing that are coming up, they want change and change at a radical level, and organizations that aren't willing to change with them. That's why I left my last corporate job over 10 years ago. The organization wasn't willing to change. And so I left to open my own company.
Yeah. And you wanted to go. And quite frankly, that's what a lot of young people today. So Generation Z, that goes up to about the age of 18, 19 years old, they already are predicted to be what will be the largest entrepreneurial generation in history, because wow, they already see the landscape of this. And nearly 80% of them have said that they want to be their own boss, because they want to go right into business for themselves, because they don't trust the whole corporate mentality. So if this winds up being true, this is also going to be a tremendous challenge and shift for workforce development in this country, because they're going to be a large generation following up the millennials. And I mean, right now, between millennials and Generation Z, it's 100 million Americans out of 330. So that's 2/3 of what is in this country today. And if a large portion of them go their own way, that's going to create a challenge.
Yeah, because then that asks you, who are you selling? Well, I guess you could have a lot of B2B relationships out there, but it is true. It's about, you know, allowing people to innovate and come to the table with ideas. Just last week, I heard a wonderful speaker who shared, he was a Navy ship captain, Mike from, I think his book is called It's Your Ship. And he had the worst ship in the entire Navy. And this young kid came up to him one day. And I guess that in the Navy, you have to repaint a ship every month, or this used to happen. And one day this kid says, why are we repainting this ship every month? This is such a huge waste of our time. You know, you could be paying somebody $5 sure, an hour. But he wasn't being insubordinate. It was actually a question, to your point, of why are we doing this? And he followed it up, though, with another brilliant idea that, thank God, Mike, the gentleman who authored this book, took advantage of. And this kid said, well, why aren't we using stainless steel? Because I guess what happened was, the reason the Navy would repaint the ships is that the ships would have metal on the top of the boat, which would rust and send rust down the side of the boat, which was dangerous for the ships. And so this young kid said, why don't we just replace everything with stainless steel bolts and so forth instead? And sure enough, it didn't just make a difference for that one ship, it became a change that the whole entire Navy implemented, all because this one kid right, yes, said, why aren't we using stainless steel?
Exactly. That's exactly right. I remember I used to do business a long time ago with Caterpillar, and there was their forklift division. And this was back in like mid 80s. And I was doing work with them, like I was selling to them when I first got out of college. And I remember they used to ship forklift trucks. If you could imagine a flatbed truck, and they would put, you know, they would put three lift trucks on the back of the flatbed. If you could imagine them kind of front to back, front to back, front to back, and they would put them on there. And then they came up with this contest. I mean, they've been doing this for decades, right? And this is how they would ship them out to customers and everything else. And they came out with this contest, and they said, if somebody could come up with a way for us to save money, we'll give you X percent of it. I don't remember what the percentage was. It was like 5% or 10% of what the annual savings is. We'll give it to you. And literally, it took 24 hours to somebody to come up and go, you know, if we turn the forklift trucks side by side, we could put five trucks onto that trailer. And it was, and they did the math on it, and it saved tens of millions of dollars in shipping. And it was unbelievable. But it wasn't until it was worth it for somebody to step up and do that. You know, it was like, it was a game changer.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, that's it. It's just being open to innovation. I think across all generations and all employers, whether you're a two-person company or a 2,000 or 20,000 person company, it's the companies that are afraid to innovate and afraid of changes that are going to stagnate and become obsolete in the next 5, 10, 15 years, probably less than that at the rate we're going with change.
Yeah, that's correct. And so my, you know, so my book, my speeches, everything that I do is to drive people to the understanding that if you unleash their passion, purpose, and performance by connecting them to vision, answering their question why, which is why I called the book Answering Why. If you answer that question, get them to see and buy into a vision, understand how they think, what makes them tick, then that allows you to push them further and faster. But even more than that, you are unleashing a tremendous, see, I tell this to business and industry all the time. You can either look at young people today, 39 and younger, as a problem to solve, or you can look at them as a tremendous resource to be unleashed within your business or in your schools or in your home. And if you look at them the second way, as a powerful, tremendous resource to unleash, you can solve the problem. I mean, the reason I've won 7 national book awards in the last 6 weeks for my book is that the message that resonates with young people in the workforce, in education, and even in the home will change the way you view young people so that you can push them further and faster and help them achieve whatever it is they want to achieve in their lives. And when those things come together in a beautifully, you know, synergistic way, everybody wins. The employee wins, the student wins, the person in your home, your son or daughter, and then ultimately the business or the school system wins. And I'm seeing that play out across North America.
Oh, gosh, you know, Mark, I could talk to you for hours about this, but we only have so much time in the show. So I want to be sure, were there any other gems that I didn't get a chance to pick your brain about or any takeaways that you'd love our listeners out there who either might be millennials themselves or Generation Z and thinking about how to motivate themselves, or perhaps they're an employer or a parent out there who you could share a little pearl of wisdom that we didn't get out of you?
Well, for parents, I would say, you know, the more you can connect lifestyle to potential future careers and giving young people the option to make for now decisions. I call it the for now decision, which means simply they don't need to figure out what they want to do with the rest of their life. How can they pick something now that will allow them for now to move forward? They can change next week, next month, next year. For employers, I would say creating vision, purpose that far beyond simply making money and shareholder value. But how can your company contribute to the greater good, or department, or wherever you sit within an organization? How can you make a difference in your local community in some way and connect the contributions of your employees, to take part in that will also create vision and forward movement. And so I think that is incredible. And so for young people themselves, I will tell you this, you can create a tremendous competitive advantage in the workforce today. If you show up 5 minutes early, stay 5 minutes late, and care while you're there, employers will beat a path to your door, because that's what everyone is looking for. They're looking for people who come, they're willing to put their phone down, go to work, get the job done, and don't show up right on time. Show 5 minutes early, stay 5 minutes late, and you will stand out amongst a crowd of people that are not willing to do that.
So true. Well, tell everybody, Mark, where can they find your book if they want to work with you or your consulting organization? Where can they find out information about that?
Best place to look me up is online at markcperna.com. C is my middle initial, so it's MARKC, and then PERNA, Perna, and I'm sure you'll put that in the show notes, .com. And then the book's available on Amazon. It's available at a lot of Barnes & Noble stores across the country, and they can reach out and get whatever information they want from my website. I've got a book discussion guide on there. I've got a parent-child conversation starter on how to start that lifestyle conversation. All of that's free on my website in the resources section, so people can take it. They don't have to sign up for it. They can just download it and get free information. There's also the first chapter of my book is available for free at markcperna.com. So thank you, Jennifer.
Oh, thank you, Mark. Well, it's been such a pleasure having you on. I learned a lot, and I know this is a very hot topic. And even as a millennial myself, I kind of had a couple aha moments of, oh, that makes sense of why I chose that direction or this direction with my career. So I greatly appreciate the insights you offered me and all of our listeners today. And in case our listeners missed any portion of today's show, just a reminder that you can find the show in its entirety available for download shortly after the show on the latalkradio.com website under the Get Yourself the Job page. At the bottom of the page, you'll find the archive for this and any other shows. Or if you prefer it more in podcast format, the show is available later in the week on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job. And you can find it in podcast format under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. And I also share a lot of articles on our Facebook page, which is called Get Yourself the Job. Interesting press release articles that sometimes don't make it to the show. And I'll often share a recap of today's show with Mark for anybody who might have missed it. So I'll be sure to share the links there as well. So thank you so much, Mark. It's been such a pleasure to have you on. And thanks to all of our listeners for tuning in out there.
Thank you.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.